open up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up.
Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been. Pour yourself something cold.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there! Hope everybody had a great weekend. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea, and we have got a big show for you once again here on CBD. We're going to kick things off right away with Louis Riddick, former NFL scout, and of course, player for the Cleveland Browns, who is now working at ESPN. We'll talk to him at 1:05. At 2 o'clock, we'll have Jim Donovan for you. In the second hour as well, we'll go through picks 1 through 8. This is our final mock, Matt Wilhelm. Picks 1 through 8, we will go through those, and we'll just kind of get everything going here. But is it not amazing how the NFL can produce the top news story seemingly every single day? And no, I'm not talking about the fact that Sam Bradford has not shown up to workouts and is demanding to be traded now in Philadelphia following the trade to the number 2 spot with the Cleveland Browns.
Not
I'm talking
my
about
problem.
That the court appeals court has reinstated Tom Brady's 4-game suspension. Not even saying that they felt he was guilty or not, but just upholding the right of Roger Goodell to issue the punishment. So now 4-game suspension in for Tom Brady. And wouldn't you know it, his first game back will be at First Energy Stadium.
Against your Cleveland
against
Browns.
The Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it. I had a good workout this morning with my wife. We're rolling around trying to get patio furniture set up. And then I pull up Pro Football Talk and see that. And I was like, are you kidding me? And it wasn't even good for, you know, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people who are anti-Patriots because of how good they are or anti-Brady because of how good they are and Deflategate and Spygate and all that other stuff are like, good. I'm like, really? Simply because of where we fall on their schedule. And knowing that if there was because of the potential, all the offseason implications that happened last year, the chip that they played with going into the football season, you know, without Edelman, with Edelman, it didn't matter. They were just going out there, and Brady was going to do everything he could to kind of thumb his teeth at the NFL.
You know, it's kind of disappointing to me. I think it's disappointing that this is even happening. If the punishment for Stickum, which they would say is cheating, is just a tiny fine, then the punishment for this should be. The physicists have explained it. The NFL looks ridiculous for continuing to pursue it. I think it's ridiculous. But nonetheless, there it is, dominating the headlines once again here on draft week. It's not enough that it's draft week. They're going to dominate the headlines anyway. They come out with this Tom Brady thing. And when, you know, can the Browns get a break? Could they be in those first 4 games? No, they
could
not.
Maybe he's rusty. Maybe he'll come back rusty.
Yeah, he's going to be... I bet he'll be in
angry.
Some unbelievably intense training so that he can come back and, like, he's going to try to do
he'll go for 4,000 plus
in
12
game.
Games.
In one game. All right, let's go to the Ohio Business Machine hotlines right now and bring in one of our very favorites, draft analyst for ESPN, Louis Riddick. Louis, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're doing very well. Obviously, we have finally arrived at the week of the draft for the Cleveland Browns. Things a little bit different than they were a week ago now. No longer number 2. They're picking 8th. In your most recent mock draft, you have Laremy Tunsil making it all the way down to the Browns. Is that the ideal scenario in your mind if you're Cleveland?
Well, I think it would be a scenario that they'd be real happy with. I know that the fan base there may not want to hear of any mock drafts where they're picking offensive linemen because it's not something that really gets people fired up. But this team really needs to be built from the ground up once again. They need to get some firepower coming off the edges as far as pass rush is concerned, something where they can protect their new franchise quarterback. And, yeah, I said franchise quarterback, at least for the time being, and Robert Griffin, so they better get him protected. So they better build up this offensive line as well. And, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens here with Cam Irving, whether or not he is a viable replacement for Alex Mack as far as being a starting center. They got to find a right tackle, really a real competent long-term right tackle to replace Mitch Schwartz, who's one of my favorite players in the NFL, quite honestly, as far as where he's come from and how he's turned himself into a pretty good right tackle in the league. And, you know, as far as Laremy Tunsil is concerned in particular, will he make it down there to eight? Maybe, maybe not. As far as the tackles are concerned, between Stanley Conklin and him, you know, I factor in everything. I'm just not one of these people who's just going to buy into what conventional wisdom says, and that is that Tunsil's the best tackle. You got to look at everything concerning his ability and his availability going forward. And I'm going to take the cleanest prospect if I'm looking at those three. That's why I have Ronnie Stanley going first and then Jack Conklin second of the tackle group. But, yeah, I think they'd be happy getting someone of that caliber who could really be a cornerstone for them as they can try to build this thing from the ground up once again.
Lewis, again, with the Browns kind of sitting at number eight, are they truly going to have to sit back and really not know what player may or may not be available because of, you know, how many different scenarios 3 through 7 could essentially entail that they're going to have to, you know, when they're on the clock, they may have to make a pick that they weren't ready to make prior to this draft?
Yeah, I think, well, the key there is that they have to be ready to make multiple different types of picks. So they can't have their mind set on one or two players. You got to almost have maybe 4 or 5 different guys sitting there in front of you that you would say, oh, look, are we okay with taking any one of these guys? Will we be happy taking any one of these guys, and how would we prioritize them? If not, we got to be ready to get on the horn and see if someone wants to move up into this 8 slot. And you hear rumblings of people maybe wanting to get back up there, namely the Tennessee Titans, who may want to trade back into the top 10 because they have their eye on somebody. So you have to be ready to think fast and think very efficiently as soon as you are on the clock, and even before you are on the clock, to start having some scenarios played out in your head. You can't be set on any one thing. That's the cool part about the draft, is that the best thinkers and the best adjusters are the ones who usually come out ahead here. If you get caught off guard, that's your own fault, because you got to prepare for the unprepared. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's the truth.
Talk with Lewis Riddick, and it is the truth. And one thing that in your scenario, I think that maybe the Giants and Bears, you know, might not expect but could happen would be the falls of Miles Jack into Forrest Buckner out of the top 8. And now you have Miles Jack going to the Giants at 10, Buckner to the Bears at 11. With Jack, I'm assuming it's the medical concern that pushes him down. Why do you have Buckner dropping to number 11?
Well, I just think that's because of the way the board fell and because of how, you know, looking at what his skill set is, looking at what some of these teams need, talking to people around the league about maybe exactly how they have him valued as far as DeForest is concerned. And believe me, I think DeForest Buckner is a wonderful player. He could go anywhere in between 3 and 11, to be quite honest with you. That's what's cool about this draft. Beauty is going to be in the eye of the beholder. It really is. With Miles, it's strictly a medical issue. That's it. There's nothing bad I have to say about Miles Jack from a playing perspective or from his as far as his character is concerned. But his medical has some teams scared to death. His medical has some teams concerned. His medical has some teams going, okay, we can manage this. It's worth the risk. So how do you project a guy like that? I mean, that means he could go anywhere from 3, if you wanted to say he'd go that high, to San Diego, or he could go down to 31. Who knows? It just all depends, and you know how the draft gets, man. Once people start sliding, other teams start going, okay, well, did we miss something? If that team passed on him, we don't want to be the ones to step it up. And then the next team, it's a copycat league in that way too. So Miles is in a pretty precarious situation. I hope it works out best for him and he gets picked high and he has a great career, but that is really an unknown.
In your days in the NFL, in a front office, how would you handle a situation like that with a guy like Miles Jack? What, you know, are you saying, all right, traditionally a first-round pick hits it, you know, we'll call it 60% for argument's sake. We think that he's a 100% hit-type player if he's healthy. Mm-hmm. We think we have an 80% chance of him being healthy, so then the risk outweighs it. How do they actually, what calculations do you go through to decide when to pull the trigger on a guy like Miles Jack?
To be quite honest with you, there really is no tried and true formula, man. A lot of times that comes down to really just trusting your medical staff in particular. This is where those guys come to the forefront. This is where, again, planning even before the draft day comes around, or even before you're even thinking about the draft, and getting the best possible medical advice you could possibly get as far as people on your staff. So you can go to them in this pre-draft process and say, hey, look, there's a chance a guy like Miles Jack, who we think is a Pro Bowl type of will linebacker, could fall to us. Tell us your best professional estimate about whether or not we can get one rookie contract out of him, you know, 5 years if we were to pick up his option, And as a first rounder, could we get two out of him? Could we get 8 years? Just tell us your best estimate here, because we really want to take this guy. And you, and it really becomes just an exchange of information, trusting your medical staff, because there isn't a scout I know or a GM that I know that can make that projection right now as far as how long Miles is going to last. Not a single one. So you have to depend on them. And then it becomes, okay, where are we at as far as our program build? Where are we at as far as our team? Where are we at as far as this position? Can we take the risk or can't we? If I'm a new GM, I can't. I don't want to risk drafting a guy who could like play 1 year or play 10 years. You're probably going to be a little bit more conservative. If you're an established GM, maybe you had a down year. Your team's still pretty strong. Maybe, you know, something happened that made you have a bad year. So where you're up there where you could pick a guy like this in the top 10, 15 picks, you still go, hey, I'll roll the dice. Just so many different scenarios that would make you take him or not take him. And it's really just, it's really team by team. I'll tell you this. When you're on draft rooms, the night of the draft, you think that it's some real nice, streamlined, you know, very methodical, objective process. There's a lot of emotion going through there. A lot of people I'm who sure. are in that draft room who have never been in a draft room, everybody wants to be an expert. Everybody wants to put their opinion in there. It can get hairy. The best teams just keep it as simple as possible.
Yeah, Lewis, another scenario that has been discussed probably all last week since we moved back to 8 is moving back again. Mm-hmm. And I guess what are a couple of the trading partners? I know that the Dolphins, if they could potentially get Ezekiel Elliott at 8, maybe a partner, the Tennessee Titans, there's been rumors that they want to move back inside the top 10 and maybe take a stab and get Laremy Tunsil that they could have gotten at number 1. Who else are you hearing that may in fact want to get back inside that top 10 and potentially trade with the Browns?
Huh. Yeah, those teams are really the ones that I have heard. It'll be interesting to see what the Jets want to do there at 20, although that is a long distance to come to go from 20 to 8 if there was somebody that they wanted. You got to keep an eye on the Bills there at 19. I believe they're at 19. Yes. There's a lot of people who may want to get back into the top 10 if there's someone there that starts to fall that they like. Those teams that you've talked about have really been the ones, namely Tennessee in particular. That's the one that keeps popping up the most often, that their intention always was to try and to trade out and then get back in with all the ammunition that they have. That's what will make it exciting, because there's a lot of different scenarios.
Talking with Lewis Riddick. Lewis, let's talk about these quarterbacks. I wanted Jared Goff to come to the Browns. The Rams kind of took that, stole that thunder, the Browns, and then traded out. The name being kind of rumored with Hugh Jackson right now is Paxton Lynch. What are your thoughts on Paxton Lynch as a prospect, and how did you rank him in this year's class?
Yeah, very interesting physical talent. As far as height, weight, speed, physical upside, just pure athletic physical upside. But the game is going to be an adjustment for him. There's a lot that he's going to have to digest and be able to incorporate into his game in a nice, smooth, methodical manner as far as taking plays in his helmet, being able to regurgitate it to people in a huddle, being able to work from under center, get some of his reads from under center. There's a lot of different things. We talked to him up at ESPN recently about it. He said, you know, he knows it's going to be an adjustment, and he's working hard on it right now.
Sure.
How did I rank him? He's a guy who, quite honestly, ideally you would probably want to take Paxton Lynch. Given the state of the quarterback position, you probably want to take him late 1, early 2, if you could, because the developmental curve is going to be pretty steep. But at this time of year, well, he's sitting in a good position, man. You know how the quarterback position is.
Yes.
You know how desperate people are. He's rising.
And again, the Cleveland Browns not only draft 8, could potentially move back. There's been rumors over the course of this weekend that both the Broncos and the Cleveland Browns, who sit 31 and 32, could want to move up back into the first round. If the Browns stay pat at 32, what position of need do you essentially see them addressing, or would it still continually see how the dominoes fall in front of them and go best player available at that point?
That's the second scenario is what I would foresee them wanting to do, because of the fact that they need, quite honestly, another quarterback. They need another pass rusher. They could use another corner. They could use an offensive lineman. They could use a wide receiver. So all those positions right there, which are the top 5 on the team, you couldn't go wrong taking the best one at any of those positions. So I don't think I wouldn't say necessarily if I'm the Browns and you're starting off fresh like this that you're really trying to you're always trying to target certain people. But again, you have to have a bunch of cards sitting there in front of you and saying, look, we need all of these positions. These are the guys who we like at these positions. Who's fallen to us And truly, let's just take the best one by position that we like and just go from there. I don't think there's – if I'm the Browns right now, quite honestly, I'm excited because there's so many different ways you can go. And when you're building a team like this from scratch, as long as philosophically you know what you're looking for, that's what you do. You truly in this situation go, let's just take the best player we can take because we need a bunch.
Yes, and certainly the Browns do. I want to touch on the quarterback because you called RG3 the franchise quarterback earlier. When and obviously, I look at him now that if the top two quarterbacks are off the board, now maybe they do love Lynch or somebody later on, and we'll see if they end up drafting a quarterback. But I look at him as kind of your rookie project this year. Why do you think he can be successful with Hugh Jackson? Or do you?
As far as RG3 is concerned?
Yes.
Look, I've been on record as saying this, and I'm not a flip-flopper. I'm not a big believer.
Okay.
I'm just not. I don't care who the quarterback coach is, and I have respect for Hugh Jackson as a coach. But there are certain things that I don't care who you have coaching them. Certain guys just can't process the information and get their body to do what their mind is telling them to do fast enough and consistent enough to be a franchise type of quarterback. And RG3, when it comes to the downs that really matter, and I'm not talking about his rookie year when he took the world by storm, running the zone read and then building a play action passing game off of the zone read that people hadn't seen before. I'm not talking about that RG3. I'm talking about the one who has to sit in the gun on third down.
Yep.
And you're running the same kind of route combinations that everyone else is. You have to change protections. You have to read out coverages. You have to make decisions to be accurate with the football on a consistent basis. I haven't seen that yet. To the point where I'd go, okay, that's a franchise quarterback. We'll see. Maybe this is a year something clicks for him. I haven't seen it yet. And as a personnel person, it's all about projecting future performance. I just don't see it. So if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I hope for the sake of Cleveland that I am wrong.
I mean, listen, at the end of the day, you don't sign a deal like he signed, given that he was the rookie of the year, the Heisman Trophy winner, the number two overall pick, if there was a ton of belief league-wide in his ability to be that guy.
Sure, and that's not to try and be pessimistic. That's just trying to be realistic about it. I mean, and watching him during his career. But like I said, for the city of Cleveland, I hope it is the case because, believe it or not, that place is still special to me. Had some of my best years of my career there, and kind of getting a little old seeing that place suffer year in and year out and have to always rely on hope in the offseason.
Absolutely. Lewis, last one for me. Again, you said you've got the love for Cleveland, and you mentioned – when I asked you the question about 32, there is a number of needs, or there's a lot of needs that this team has. So I would imagine that you were in favor of moving back from 2 to 8 and accumulating those picks and creating a strong young nucleus that Sashi Brown has been adamant about going up to the podium and saying, hey, we've got to get young. We've got to get guys that are going to be here and buy into this new system here with Hugh Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, Look, I'm very much so in agreement with that plan. I'm very much so in agreement with them trying to take to get as many trips to the plate as they can, so to speak, and accumulating as many picks as possible. And then, okay, look, they've done their work. I think I commend them for doing that. Now, the key is on Thursday night and the nights preceding that they have players that they do like, that they all agree on, that they have discussed they've already discussed the plan for. This is how we're going to develop them. This is how we're going to get them acclimated to our city. This is how we're going to get them acclimated to our building, to our practice habits, to the rest of our locker room, to our trainers, our weight staff. And I mean have a very comprehensive, detailed plan to hit on these guys because you don't start talking about that stuff after you got them. Like, oh, well, now we got them. What are we going to do with them? You have to talk about that beforehand if you really want to maximize this process. You want to know why a lot of these guys, you're going to talk about 60% hit rate, 50% hit rate. You want to know why that kind of stuff happens? Because people don't talk about it and really plan for it beforehand. I know it. I've seen it. I've lived through it.
Yeah.
And you would think that you would, right, in a billion-dollar industry like
yes.
that? Yes. But people get kind of thinking, you know, I really don't think there's enough respect sometimes for the game of football or any game in particular because people think it's just that. It's just a game, man. It's just football. How hard can it be? It's serious business, and when you take it serious, it'll give you you'll get the results that you want, and hopefully Hugh and Sashi and everyone else involved with how this place is going to go and be run, hopefully they planned all this out.
Yes, certainly. Hopefully they have. Lewis, we certainly appreciate time. Know you got to run. Thanks for being with us, and it'll be very interesting to see how it all plays out beginning this Thursday.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right. The great Louis Riddick. Follow him on Twitter at LRiddickESPN was our guest to kick things off. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Still to come, Jim Donovan at 2 o'clock. And in the second hour, we'll also get into our mock draft version 2.0, the finals, the finale. We'll let you know as we lead it up to the draft this Thursday live from Chicago. It's going to be an exciting week here in Berea.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD, Nathan Zagura, and of course Matt Wilhelm, along with Jason Gibbs with you here. Gibbs, how are you today, brother?
I'm good, fellas. How are you?
Did you hit the links this weekend?
What was that? I'm sorry.
Did you hit the links this weekend?
Twice.
Oh, dude, I am so jealous.
Had the ladies' bachelorette party, so that got
you
me
You got 27, Zagura.
Yep.
Gibbs got 36 in?
Yes, sir.
And I'm pulling the goose egg.
Come on, man. Let's go.
Dude, I played 18.
My Saturdays are consumed by five-year-old soccer.
Yeah, we'll get to that, yeah.
And second-grade football.
I mean, that's...
That's all right, but that's coming to an end, right?
It all comes to an end this Saturday.
This weekend.
And by the way, very rarely do I ever get out Saturday and Sunday, but...
I know. I told... Yeah,
me neither. And I was able to...
I told Nathan, I've got Meadowood right across the street from my house. It's the perfect warm up to take my to take the show on the road. You know, play that. I play by myself. I roll through in about an hour and 20 minutes. Like I'm talking
perfect.
Like driveway to driveway. Like
perfect.
Yep. And
hour
usually,
and 30 minutes max.
Walk it. Grab a pull cart.
No.
Just walk it.
Never.
Oh, yeah.
We did our 9 at Walden on Saturday, and like there was nobody out there. It was just me and Sims, the two of us, and we did about an hour and 15 minutes. It was like heaven.
9?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was heaven. Yesterday
when
we
you're
played
good.
Yesterday we played me, the kid, Sims, and
how was the kid's game?
91. So it was best round of the year so far. 91. Okay.
And he was just talking smack on Friday.
Yeah, Sims played well. He's been playing very well.
You guys play tips?
We play the Blues,
okay,
which are par 72. The ratings, I think, 73.9.
What's the yardage? 69?
About 60. It's a long 6,800, 6,700. Okay. But it plays long. It plays longer for some reason. I wish it didn't sometimes. But we also played with Big Play Gare.
Did you?
Big Play Gare.
Is he a member?
No. But he does.
Your guest?
We brought him out there. He does not necessarily hit the straightest ball or consistently hit the ball.
But he hits it hard.
When he hits it, I'd never heard a sound like that on a golf course. You could hear the ball like whoosh, like whistle through the air.
Like a tour player.
No, because a tour player hits it like normal still. You know what I mean? I mean, I know they hit it a long way. Like maybe, I don't know. I've never seen Bubba Watson hit a ball live to know what that sounds like.
Yep.
But Gary swings as hard as he possibly can. The one that he hit that was like right down the middle, he hit like 355.
I have a scenario like that too. Again, I don't hit driver. I took driver out of my bag because of all the California golf, you know, living in California for so long. California golf, you can shoot 100 very easily if you can't hit it, if you can't stay on the course.
Sure.
So I got tired of taking doubles and bogeys and, you know, triples because I can't stay in play by hitting a driver. So I gave that up. But so I hit. It all depends. If it's a, you know, an elevated tee box, I have a 2-iron that I can hit probably 295 yards.
Jeez.
Okay. But I mean, the thing doesn't get any more than it has to be off an elevated tee box or else it just runs for 100 yards. So I usually hit, you know, a hybrid or 4-iron, 255, 235 to get out in the middle of the fairway. That's it.
So then you should be, if you can do that, you should be, so I'm ready for you to dominate golf courses.
I have a driver now, okay? I need to tune it in still, but I was playing in the Archie Griffin golf outings, like celebrity golf outing down in Columbus, not this past season, so 14. And I went down, and these guys are just kind of like, you know, you play with a group of guys, they all have a ton of money, and they all have the M1s, M2s, like tricked out. One guy's got Callaway, Nike. One guy, you know, they've got like the clubs of all clubs,
sure,
right? And the guy's just like begging me to hit one. And I'm like, you guys all go first and I'll go last. Or I'll go first. I'll throw one out 250 middle of the fairway. And you guys just poke one out there and run by me, whatever. Okay. So he's like, come on. And it was this par 5, uphill par 5, slight dog leg right. And he gives it to me. I'm like, fine, give it to me. And it's one of those things where it's like the first one of the day. You know, you didn't overthink it to screw it up. And I hit one probably, I don't know if it sounded like Barnage's, but it was probably 335 to 340, you know, 340 yards. Slight uphill. I hit it through almost like through the dog leg. And I was like on the fringe of the fairway. But then we had another guy pulls out his hybrid. We're still, you know, we're like 215 out. He hits a hybrid like to 5 feet and we make eagle in a scramble. So it was amazing. But it's like these guys, like, so then they have me hitting one the rest of the day. I replicated it one other time, but I was like 330 right. I was 330 left.
He can hit it left. I mean, I've never seen anybody hit left. He hit a couple that looked like what I would
imagine. Is he a
righty? Yeah.
So he just comes
and he would just whip it around.
Okay.
Explode the ball. It's crazy.
Yeah.
He hit, there's a par three that's like 210 yards uphill.
Okay.
And he hit a 9-iron, and he wasn't on the green, but he was green high.
A 9-iron?
Yeah.
What?
And I smoked my 5-iron, which I thought was a pretty good 5-iron. It's crazy. It's crazy. I've never seen anything like it in my
life. I've played with guys like that before.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I can, but I'm not good enough to do it consistently.
I can't. I can't at all.
No. My back doesn't allow me to get through it the way I want to.
I've never seen anything like it. It was unbelievable. He is a Pro Bowl football player, not a Pro Bowl golfer. But if you needed one.
So what did he shoot?
I have no idea.
Okay. Just a lot of mulligans off the tee?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We're just more in awe of the good moments. We're focusing on the good
moments. I hear you.
He can hit it, though. Like, good. I've never seen anybody hit a golf ball. Nice. I've seen some people hit a golf ball, but nothing like that, folks. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850 if you want to call us up. We got our mock draft coming up. Jim Donovan is coming up. I don't know about you guys, but it does seem, Peter King talked about it this morning, a lot of talk about Paxton Lynch and Hugh Jackson really liking Paxton Lynch. What do you guys think about that?
I don't mind it. I just want to, I'm not in love with it at 8, that's for sure. I'd love it a hell of a lot more if Tennessee was willing to get back into the top 10 and potentially have Laremy Tunsil fall in their lap. Everyone pegged him to be the number one overall pick to Tennessee, and us be at 15 and get Paxton Lynch than I would at 8.
Yes.
And the mentality behind it is simply, we don't just need a young nucleus of players. We need contributors. I want those guys not in a Browns uniform on the sideline. I want them in a Browns uniform contributing. And that's why, as I've had conversations, you know, with you, I talked to John Pagano, or via text, the defense coordinator of the San Diego Chargers, who draft 3. He asked me a little bit about Bosa, and I just said, you know, just like at 2, at 3, I need a guy that's going to be on the football field.
Yep.
60% of my offensive or defensive snaps.
Yep.
So we can develop all day. That's why Carson Wentz didn't make a lot of sense for us at 2. I want immediate impact. So if Ramsey is that guy, if Bosa is that guy, if Elliott can come in and be that guy and, you know, be a 2-down back or a 3-down back, whoever it is, I want impact, immediate impact. I don't want to wait around anymore. We're going to have to wait already.
Yes, we are.
So you might as well throw him out there, you know, to get the NFL experience, the game experience of playing 5 of 7 on the road to start a season. You know, the struggles of learning to be a pro, all those things. I want those to happen right now. So, again, the alpha comes out in that player next year, the year after.
When we're ready to get moving here.
Correct.
Gibbs, what do you think about it?
I love Paxton Lynch.
You do?
At 8?
Optimum Scouting. Remember we had Eric Galco on?
Yep.
Eric Galco at Optimum Scouting believes that Paxton Lynch and his whole crew there, they believe Paxton Lynch is the best quarterback in this draft.
And he's not the only one.
I mean, we've had Galco on, right?
Yeah. We have.
I don't think he is.
I like him.
He's a project.
And frankly, if you can sit him for a couple of years and RG3 finds the, you know, fountain of youth and is playing like he did his rookie year and stays healthy, then you wouldn't need any quarterback that you would draft. So I feel like 8 is awfully early, but – again, if that's the guy you want, if that's the position that you most want to upgrade, and he's there and you like him, might as well take him. But I think Number one, he won't last past 20. You know this for sure. So if you don't take him at 8, you're going to have to move back up, and you're going to have to move ahead of the Jets.
I just don't see this group trading up. I could be wrong, but I don't see any way, shape, or form that Sashi Brown and Paul D. Podesta will ever give up multiple picks for one pick.
You either trade back into the teens.
Right.
And so, that's where you take him, which in which case, right. I'd be ecstatic with that.
Sure, me too.
I'd like that,
that would
too.
Be great. If, but I don't
if,
see it.
If that was their quarterback, trade back in the teens and get him. And if it's not their quarterback, I still want to trade back in the teens anyway and get that wide receiver. I think that's the best spot to get the best wide receiver in this draft, which is what I'm hopeful for this team. All right, we'll take a break. Yeah, we need playmakers. Yes, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get to the phones. We got a couple lined up already. Your turn to call up 216-578-0850 here on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm with you here on CBD from the Dog Bowl and Brea. We're going to get the phone lines in just a second. 216-578-0850. Also, don't forget, if your Social Security benefits have been denied, call 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Elk and Elk, proud sponsor of the Cleveland Browns.
Go Browns.
Go Browns. All right, let's get back to the phone lines, 216-578-0850. A lot of shakeups here in our mock draft today. We'll talk about those, but let's get to Phil in Brecksville first. Phil, welcome.
Hey, Matt, Nathan Gibbs. Look, you know, I'm really excited about this draft, and I don't believe a lot of what the national media has said about where we're at. Look, I think that the Browns right now, I think Gibson and Poyer, I think that's a wash. I think Campbell to Whitner, I think that's a wash. I think Carlos Dansby, everything was routed towards him, and that's probably going to change. And you know what? You guys can probably name guys on the offensive line, but I can't. You know, I think we're going to be stronger next year. I think we got pushed around, and I think the defense is going to play more free. I think they're going to, you know, he's going to take the shackles off them. I'm just hoping that they get some playmakers. I don't care where they are, but we need people that will make plays. And I believe that we're going to have a better record than we did last year, and I'm looking for 6-10.
Hey, that's where Nathan and I came out on it. And to be honest, I don't necessarily know if freer is the right word for how we might play defensively, because we played too free last year. I think we're going to be an assignment sound defense, which is a very, very good thing. We're going to be well coached. We're going to be, you know, assignment sound, and we're going to put guys in situations that they can handle and they can basically play their best football and control. I don't say control, but they, you know, the controllables, but it's like, it's do their job. Put them in a situation to succeed.
Put them in a position to succeed. Have responsibility.
And I don't want to play musical chairs anymore.
No.
On defense.
Find out who your best defense players are and then go.
Yes.
That's what I'd like to see as well. Let's go to the Cleveland Elf. Cleveland Elf.
Yeah, what's going on, guys?
Hey, what's up, man?
Let me start off by saying I think both of you got robbed in the Cleveland Twitter media poll.
I don't know. Yes, I guess.
I didn't know what happened.
One of the guys, the quarterbacks I want to talk about, I know Peter King got everybody all fired up with this article with Paxton Lynch. I just don't see it, especially if you go back and watch the Auburn film when he was actually going against a faster defense. I just don't see it. A guy I think that we should do our due diligence on is Christian Hackenberg, probably there in the third round. If you go back and watch what he did under Bill O'Brien, you know, the tape's there in a pro-style offense. I think the kid's got tools to build with. Yeah, you know, he threw the coach under the bus a little bit, but I think he's just competitive fire spirit type of guy I want around. I think we get him late, maybe a project, but could work out. Want to know what you guys think on that.
I'm not a huge Hackenberg guy. At this point, I'm not. I don't love his tape. I thought he started off very, very well, but this is a guy that did not end out his career. Now, went through a lot, dealt with a lot there, but not a guy that I am overly enamored with. I would much rather have Lynch or Connor Cook or Cardale. Now, if Hackenberg is a guy that people like, okay, I'm open to it, but he's not at the top of my list for the mid-round quarterbacks that I want or the early second-round quarterbacks that I'd want to be looking at.
No. I've seen Hackenberg firsthand following Ohio State with him at Penn State, and I know that what he did as a freshman was promising, but I think the multiple years that he had after that is what scares the you-know-what out of me.
Sure.
And I think for a Cleveland fan base, is as untrusting, and we feel like now everything is a fluke, could his freshman year have been a fluke? You know, playing out of his mind, in a system that he's comfortable with, but a shade over 50% passing percentage at the college level, right, against the Big Ten that Ohio State competed against? There's not many dominant defense. I mean, you're talking Rutgers, Northwestern, Indiana's. Those are the teams that a Hackenberg, if he truly is a number one prospect, lights up.
Sure.
And it didn't happen consistent enough in the Big Ten for me.
It certainly did not, and I think that is something to pay attention to. All right, let's go. Stan in Brooklyn. Stan. Right.
Thanks very much for taking my call.
You got it, Stan.
I tried to get in last week, but I had two important calls I had to take waiting. But, you know, just wanted to say a couple things relative to golf, if I could. Matt, did you ever play Spring Valley Country Club?
I did, and now it's going to be the Valley of the Eagles.
I was there last week.
Isn't it going to be set up? That clubhouse is beautiful.
No, the clubhouse, they're using the original foundation.
I know. I've been there probably a month ago.
Where? Did you walk the whole course?
I did not walk the course. I drove in to the construction zone.
Well, you know what? When you drive in there, you got to pressure wash your vehicle.
This is true.
Come back up, but if you look at the architectural plans of what they're doing to that golf course.
The flyovers. Have you done the flyovers online?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, isn't that good?
Yes, sir.
There's three holes on the front and maybe four on the back that, to me, are going to be epic holes on that course.
And they're not going to be ready till next year.
I know. Gibbs was actually, and my brother, I believe. My brother was told me he was already signed up in a league that they were advertising.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I doubt it now. Yes.
No,
absolutely.
You're talking about it, they already got $6 million into the golf course itself.
I believe it. Those Chinese investors.
I'm telling you what, it's Asian money, my friend. I do
it's
know
very
that
long
for
over
a fact.
There.
Huh?
Very long money over there.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of green to play that.
That's all right. Bring it.
So I think I know what's going to happen in the future with that place. That's going to be a hangout for the rich, and they want to get away from Asia. They're going to go there.
Okay.
All right, Stan.
Hopefully, I can fit in.
Appreciate the phone call there. You know, Beatbox told me once that if you don't think that Stan is tremendous radio, then you don't know radio.
I don't. But yet I have a job in radio.
Stan, bringing it as strong as he always does. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back here on this Monday, we'll take your phone calls. We got Jim Donovan at 2 o'clock. We got Matt Wilhelm's Weekend in Review. What is next for the Giants? That's coming up in the second hour. Mock draft picks 1-8. There is a trade in mind. Big shakeup in the top 8. Going forward for Nathan Zgura and his mock draft. That's me. That's right. All right. By the way, Gibbs, do you watch Game of Thrones? Have we talked about this?
I do not have HBO right now.
We got to get that
you did
back
over
for
the weekend.
You.
If you were an AT&T UVerse customer,
no. The premiere last night.
No,
unbelievable.
Don't spoil it for people.
I would never. I would never. That is evil, but it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I've caught. I've been able to watch the first couple seasons so far, like on Netflix and whatnot. But hot and cold, it's okay.
Unbelievable.
Thank you, Gibbs.
All right.
I got you, man.
We'll be back with more ZBD right after this. There ain't no secrets anymore.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back. 216-578-0850 is the number. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Coming up at 2, Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns. Now let's go back to phones. We got Dan in Hershey Pod. Dan.
Hi, guys. Thanks again for taking my call.
You got it, man.
Hey, I guess this is most specifically for Matt. I'd like him, if possible, to give me and other Browns fans an edumacation on what is specific to a 4-3 linebacker. You know, I always think of Clay Matthews and Chip Banks and Mike Johnson with the 80s team, or living in the New York area for many years. The ultimate to me was when you had Lawrence Taylor and Carl Banks and Harry Carson in the middle, Is these outside guys always a projection? And is there anybody in this year's draft that you think projects to be an outside linebacker? Or can Mingo or Nate Orchard or any of these guys, do we already have them on the team?
What you're talking about 3-4 linebackers, correct?
Yeah, 3-4 okay. linebackers. Yeah.
3-4 linebackers. Miles Jack, to me, in our scheme, and I'll talk about it.
You're talking about at the top of the draft?
Well, anywhere. It seems to me almost like quarterbacks. You almost got to – like Harrison was a developmental guy for the Steelers. You know, they seem like they always pick people and they're on the roster for a few years before they even make the starting lineup. You know?
Yeah, so. But looking at the top of the draft, I would say, you know, Miles Jack, he would be a weak inside linebacker for us in our scheme. He would be a will linebacker, like a walk linebacker in a 4-3 scheme. I would say Darren Lee – to me, would be a weak inside linebacker, but he's still even undersized there. So he would be a will linebacker, a walk linebacker in a 4-3 defense. Now, the conversation kind of started. I know Bosa's been linked to Baltimore, potentially the Cowboys, you know, but we've talked an awful lot why it doesn't make sense for us. Because to me, and I had this conversation with John Pagano, the Chargers defense coordinator, he's kind of a tweener. You know, he's not fleet of foot enough to play outside linebacker for me. He'd have to be 255, 260. I'd love to have him running a sub 4.740, but he didn't with the 4.86. So he leaves him, while he's got amazing hands, amazing get off, a motor, all those great things, he's not lean enough, fast enough, diverse enough for me in a 3-4 scheme to have him an outside linebacker. Now, on the other side of things, would I love to have him play inside, you know, the 3 of a 3-4 defense? Absolutely. But again, he's a tweener. I'd love to have him 280, 285. At 270, he's just kind of like, he's going to get pushed around, and he's going to become a specialty player for whoever drafts him. So it's where he ends up is going to be something I'm very interested in, and I will continue to follow his weight and how they use him, because I believe – in his rookie year, he may be a specialty player, and that's why at 3, at 4, and maybe even 8, I got to get a guy that's going to play 60% of my reps. I don't want my number one overall pick running off the football field in certain downs and distances.
That's why a team like Jacksonville or a team like Dallas makes so much sense for Joey Bosa. Yeah. It's a 4-3. He'll come in and play defensive end, and he can play the whole time.
Correct.
That's what he's going to be able to do. So in terms of the edge rushers, I think that you're looking at a guy. I think Shaq Lawson counts as an edge rusher. I think Kevin Dodd could count as an edge rusher. The real bet, probably the best one from a talent standpoint, might be Noah Spence. You've got Kamale Correa out of Boise State.
Is Leonard Floyd, can he play outside?
Leonard Floyd is, but I don't know.
He's a little lean.
He's like another Mingo in terms of
body
shape.
He's like a Deion Jordan kind of guy, right?
Yeah, I don't think we want – I don't want
to. I don't want that guy.
No, me neither. But, yes, he is that kind of a guy. Those are the edges. It's not a great edge draft.
Noah Spence is a name.
It's a D-line draft.
You know, his name's kind of drifted towards the bottom of the first round, early second round. He is a, to me, probably prototypical outside linebacker in a 3-4 defense, but his 40 time wasn't as impressive as I would like it. I'm not trying to hang on a 40, because so much more goes into playing the game of football. But I need to see more explosion out of a guy coming off the edge if I'm taking you 8 overall. A guy I take 8th overall is an Aldon Smith, is a Von Miller. That's a double-digit sack guy year one.
Right.
And I don't know if that guy's in this draft.
No. Spence is probably the closest one to it, but he's got his issues, obviously, as well. On field, off the field, etc. The speed doesn't bother me. That's kind of like Terrell Suggs had that kind of speed. So that doesn't bother me much as much there on that fact. He's got to be able to get to the quarterback, and that's something Noah Spence certainly can do. And we saw at Senior Bowl he was very, very dominant in that respect doing just that. I think if the Browns could come out and get some athletes to throw at the edge, if they can also get some wide receivers in this draft, you're going to feel pretty good about it. I think there will be a commitment to wide receiver, and I think you will see quite a few of those guys going for the Browns in rounds 2 to 4, maybe even in round 1, if there is another trade back. That's it. By the way, Adam Schefter just reporting, for the first time in recent memory, NFL has notified all 32 teams that no player tested positive at the February Combine, per league sources. First time in a while that has been the case.
And I know that within the last 7 days, I've heard multiple people ask me outside of this building if Joey Bosa, there were rumors out there that he failed his drug test at the Combine, and he potentially could drop outside the top 10. That's obviously now not the case.
He did not fail at the combine. I'd heard something about Joey Bosa as well. I wonder, you know, if there's something that's not privy to us, you'll know it on draft day. If Joey Bosa goes on a big slide, you'll know that there will be a reason why that ultimately ended up happening with him. But we got our mock drafts coming up, and in my mock draft, Joey Bosa doesn't do much falling when it comes to things on draft day there. I do think it is interesting to see how San Diego goes. They've become a linchpin team in Dallas. Those 3-4 picks are very interesting. Do San Diego take the tackle, or do they take the defensive back, or do they trade out with somebody? And then for Dallas, it's simply, do they take a defensive player, or do they take Ezekiel Elliott? Because if Ezekiel Elliott gets past there, he is most likely going to be all the way down there for the Browns at number 8. Do the Browns say, hey, this guy's one of the best players in this draft, take him? Or more likely, does that put the Browns in position to make a trade back for somebody who wants Ezekiel Elliott?
And that'll be an interesting conversation for us to have throughout the remainder of this offseason as we lead into training camp. Because as I've said, since Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta and Andrew Berry had been hired, I really felt that how they approach this offseason via free agency and who they actually draft and what they value in a draft is not going to change all that much in years into the future.
No.
They're going to stick to who they are. And so if Ezekiel Elliott is available and they're great and he's the number one guy on their draft board and they stick with him, you can essentially think that into the future, if in this situation again, they go best player available and not player of need.
Correct. And I think that they're going to go for best player available or assets. I think that's what they want. Assets. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by the voice of the Cleveland Browns, Jim Donovan, here on CBD.